So we're on page 37. We're good?
We're also demanding.
Where's my notes? Just for that, I have more notes. I just have to make copies, but with pictures. Woo-hoo. All right, well, this is one chapter you don't want pictures of, right? Have you read ahead? Chapter 37. Now, this is, as I've typed in there for you, arguably the most familiar passage in Ezekiel, because Ezekiel called them dry bones, right? Remember all the spiritual songs and dem bones, right? Well, I think we lose we lose perspective, I think, on some of those songs. But this is an illustration of what we looked at last week with the fulfillment of God's new covenant with the nation of Israel and what God is doing. And I think this is a great deal of the illustration is God removing the curse from the nation of Israel. So to have these bones, as is illustrated, to have these bones scattered like this, you have to think in a Middle Eastern mindset that somebody did not care enough for you to gather your bones and bury them. And so you are, if your bones are indeed scattered around like this, it means you are probably cursed by God. Right? That would be the natural assumption. Now, how do you know who's who? Right? It's kind of a disgusting thought. But we don't have to look at skeletons to identify who's who. The point is, if there's a skeleton and the bones are scattered all over, they must have done something wrong and God must have cursed them, and therefore they're getting exactly what they deserve. Now, having said that, there's other things you need to pay attention to in this chapter, and one of that is the repetition of the Hebrew word ruach, which is translated breath, translated spirit, or capital S, spirit. It's also wind. Those are all accurate translations. Okay, so context is going to help determine that. But that's a significant thing to have 10 uses like that. So first of all, verses 1 through 6, we see the hopelessness. The hand of Yahweh was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of Yahweh and caused me to rest in the middle of the valley, and it was full of bones. And you see Ezekiel in his priestly mindset and wanting to remain pure, right? And then you have all of this, because if you go in there and walk in there or touch it, you become unclean, right? So this is a significant step of faith for Ezekiel here. And he caused me to pass among them all around. Can you see his? I mean, probably not. That's what I would do. But you can kind of see him just flinching almost as you, not wanting to step on what remains of the corpse. Right? This is why in the time of Christ, the tombs were painted with whitewash, right? So that you wouldn't touch the tomb, you wouldn't touch the cave where the bones were, because if you touch it, then you're unclean. So when Jesus calls them, you whitewashed sepulchres, right? You're painted up and you look nice on the outside, but you're inside, you are full of dead man's bones, right? You are unclean. Poor Ezekiel. Now, it's one thing, okay, you see them, right? You see the scattered bones, then God says, let's go for a walk. Okay. Right? You can see you see this sometimes with germaphobes, right? Right? You don't want to touch anything. Certainly you don't want to touch this. And it was full of bones. Verse 2, he caused me to pass among them all, and behold, There were very many on the surface of the valley, and behold, they were very dry. In other words, they've been out there a long time. They've been ignored and abandoned and under the curse for a really long time. And he said to me, Son of man, can these bones live? Now, does God know the answer to that question? Right. Does Ezekiel know the answer to that question? Is that a loaded question? Certainly is. Similar to Adam, where are you? Right? Yes. Can these bones live? And his response, now humanly speaking, the answer would be, right? No way. Because you're at that stage, right? You're beyond hope, right? And Ezekiel's wise answer, O Adonai Yahweh, O Sovereign Yahweh, you know. Now, he's not passing the buck, right? He's not avoiding I don't think he's avoiding the answer. However, as I've typed in there, I think the answer is something to the effect, only if you will it to be so. And now, only if you do it, God. There is no other way, right? No EMT is going to come along and say, you know what? We got this thing in the back of the truck. Let's just try it. We know it's experimental. You know, that'd be silly, right? That's ridiculous. God, you know. So he gets him to answer this question, and then he gives Ezekiel, which might even be a harder thing, he gives him a command. Prophesy over these bones and say to them, say to the dry bones. You know, it's one thing preaching to people. It's one thing preaching to people who don't pay attention. It's one thing to preach to people who sleep. It's a whole other thing to be preaching to scattered bones across the valley, right? That's a whole different thing. It takes it to a whole other level here. And say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of Yahweh. Well, again, that is something, not only is it a really unusual command, secondly, it's a command that those bones cannot obey. Right? They have no ears, right? So, thus says Adonai Yahweh to these bones, behold, I will cause breath to enter you that you may come to life. Wow. See, that's the only way, right? That's the only way this can happen. And I will put sinews on you. I will make flesh come up upon you and cover you with skin and put breath in you that you may come alive, and you will know that I am Yahweh. Okay, a reverse, this is an integration, right? Not a disintegration, but this is
reintegration,
right? This is life to the dead. So there seems to be a regathering in unbelief, and then that would be the gathering of the bones and the putting on the various parts and then finally giving life. Okay? That would seem to indicate a regathering in unbelief and then a full conversion. Now, so here's the situation, here's the command, the question, here's the command. Now Ezekiel at this point has a choice. Right? Now it all depends on who's standing around. Well, it doesn't all depend, but, you know, it's kind of like, Noah, I want you to build me this big boat. It's never rained before, it's never flooded before, but I want you to build a boat. And it's not like he builds it in his shop where nobody else can see it, right? He's on display the whole time. And perhaps that's the situation here as well. Now, I get the idea here that He does, I know he does not use the word immediately, but I get the impression that he does that immediately. Because he says, and so I prophesied as I was commanded. Wow. See, that's faith, right? That's a step of obedience. Now, God has said, here's what I am going to do. I will cause breath to enter you, and that you may come to life. I'll put sinews on you and make flesh come upon you, cover you with skin and put breath in you so that you may come alive. Okay, ain't never seen that before. That's never happened before, right? But okay. This is akin to Peter. I know you've been fishing all night and you've caught nothing, but go back out on the lake and throw your net on that side. Okay, right? It's a step of obedience, right? You don't know, but God has called you to do this, and faith says, okay, my faith is not in the promised, necessarily the promised results, but is in the one who gave the promise, right? And so I'm trusting God how he's going to take care of this. And so he does, and as I prophesied, Ezekiel records, there was a noise, and behold, a rumbling. And the bones came together, bone to its bone. Right? Wow. Right? Can you see Ezekiel as he's trying to be obedient? This is not in your prophet's handbook on how to do things, right? This is okay. Wow, this is amazing. And I looked, and behold, sinews were on them, and flesh came up upon them, and skin covered them. Now, those are all things that God had said he would do, right? Weird, right, from our perspective, but okay. But there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, prophesy to the breath, prophesy, son of man, and say to the breath, thus says Adonai Yahweh, the sovereign Yahweh, come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe on these who were killed, that they may come to life. And so I prophesied as he commanded me. Okay, there's that obedience. I prophesied as he commanded me, and the breath came into them, and they came to life. And if it doesn't get any more strange, and they stood on their feet, an exceedingly great military force. Again, I don't know if God will allow such a thing, but when we get to heaven, perhaps, will he let us see some reruns? This would be one I would like to go back, or maybe we can just go talk to Ezekiel and say, can you like expound on that a little further? Like, wow. So that leads us to the top of page 38, and God interprets this illustration. Now that's an extremely unusual event that has happened. And so Yahweh then interprets his actions for Ezekiel and says, son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Now it's important. Not just the southern two tribes, not just the 10 northern tribes. This is the whole house of Israel. Behold, they say, our bones are dried up, and our hope has perished, and we are completely cut off. We're dispersed. We're separated from one another. Now, is that an accurate evaluation of Israel's situation? Yeah, it is. Right? So this recognition of their condition before God, they are hopeless. Verse 12, therefore prophesy and say to them, thus says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves, my people. Now again, if you come up out of the grave, what? You're still unclean, right? But I will open your graves, I will cause you to come up out of your graves, my people, and I will bring you into the land of Israel. Now that, again, that all is this national spiritual resurrection from their spiritual grave, and I've given you several references that might be of some help for you there. But he says in verse 13, then, once all this has happened, so it seems to be a gathering in unbelief, and then you will know that I am Yahweh, when I have opened your graves and caused you to come up out of your graves, my people, and I will put my spirit within you, and you will come to life, and I will place you on your own land. Then you will know that I, Yahweh, have spoken and done it, declares Yahweh. I'm not sure where I first read this description of God, but some have said that Yahweh is the ultimate grave robber. Okay? I think that might be a interesting description. That's not one that's revealed quite like word for word like that, but in one sense, God is after the bodies of his people Israel. Right, he is after his people to restore them and bring them to life. So what an interesting, and no wonder it becomes the theme of certain songs. But let me pause there before we move on to the next section. Any questions on that? Is that it's pretty straightforward. It's just unusual. And it's by way of illustration. But God has taken them, the whole point is that God has taken this hopeless, defiled, and unclean people, and he's given them life. Could they be any worse off? Right? Could they be any worse off? We are completely dried up, our hope has ceased, and we are separated from one another. Okay. And yet God, again, there's nothing about them that makes God say, wow, that's attractive. I'll pick them. Right? It would be the exact opposite, right? It's disgusting. So, right? It's an illustration that, a vision in which he participates. I don't think there's a literal valley in one sense, but in this vision in which he is participating, it is. Again, I don't want to minimize it. I don't want to explain it away, but in one sense, it is a holodeck experience, in a sense. If you think of it that way, it's real, and yet it's not physical. But it clearly describes a physical reality. Right.
I mean, we couldn't have watched him doing that if we had to be around.
In one sense, right. Yep. Yeah. So at the same time, he saw this.
He experienced it.
And he experienced it. So however you want to label that, a vision, something along those lines. So, Go ahead.
Or basically still could be theory future even for us, or
correct.
One part that doesn't seem to do anything pertains to present Israel as far as this point they don't recognize.
Correct. Unless present Israel is part of the initial assembly process. Right. The breath has not come into the bones at this point. But maybe the bones are being assembled. You know, we are at a point in history where, at least modern history, where there are now more Jews in the land of Israel than there are in New York. You know, so when I first came here, there were more Jews in America than there were in Israel. But that has shifted. You know, I'm convinced they're not assembled in genuine faith, but they can still be part of this assembly process. So, but you're right, it is a future. But he sees it as a reality, right? Which puts us, again, how do we describe that? I used the word illustration, but it is something he saw as a done deal without it being done yet, right? So he walks by faith and not by sight, right? He's doing this in this vision, but it is still future. You know, so Ezekiel himself will not be the guy who goes to the nation of Israel or the regathered Israel and preaches to them, right? Somebody will communicate, and that's part of what we see in Revelation 7, isn't it? The 144,000 witnesses are part of that process. The two witnesses are part of that process. And yet Ezekiel himself is an illustration of someone who is communicating God's word to God's people. So, and only the word, right? To me, this would be a good illustration. Help me out here. My reference is faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Is that Romans 10? Am I right? So they need to hear the word. Faith comes through hearing the word. So whether it's Ezekiel in a vision or if it's another individual in the future communicating God's word, they need to hear the word. And Ezekiel illustrates that. Communicate God's message to those people. So, yeah. So anything else on that?
No, I was just referring.
Yeah. Correct. Correct. Yeah, that's a good point. Right. That's a very good point, because we're going to come eventually to chapter 40, eventually, and there are those who look at Ezekiel chapter 40 through 48 and say, "Well, see, this was not fulfilled with Ezra and Nehemiah and the return from exile. So therefore, chapter 40 through 48 must be figurative. And therefore, it must refer to the church." Or it could still be future. Right? So that's a good point. We're waiting for this, and but it will come about as God has communicated that He will indeed give life to His people. So He actually goes further with that in verses 15 through 28. But if there are any other, okay, so 15 through 28, there is good news that there will be, and this is a marvel, right? That there will be one future nation under one king. Now, Israel, as a nation, had three kings over, in one sense, over the entire nation, right? Saul and David and Solomon for a period of time. Solomon and his son Rehoboam horrendously failed, and the nation was split, right? And since that point in time, it has been separated all these years, right? Now God says, I'm going to put it all back together. Now, again, this is an illustration of an illustration, because now he uses the illustration of two pieces of wood. So if you need help in understanding the illustration of the bones, let's make it simpler, right? Let's just take two sticks, or whatever they may be. I think there's other things involved here. But the process seems to be that Ezekiel is going to take these two pieces of wood and join them in a physical union, and Yahweh is going to unite two pieces of wood in a physical union, and then Yahweh will unite two kingdoms in a political and spiritual union, and then Yahweh will unite the unified nation with himself in a permanent covenant relationship. Okay, that's the process. But he begins with two sticks, right? And you always have sticks, right? All you need to have a stick is at least one boy, right? And they can find a stick anywhere, right? So Ezekiel's a boy, and he found a stick. So the word of Yahweh came again to me, saying, now as for you, son of man, take for yourself one stick and write on it for Judah and for the sons of Israel. There we go. For the sons of Israel, his companions, then take another stick and write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all the house of Israel, his companions. So he got out his nice Milwaukee Drawzall marker and wrote on them so people could read them, right? Then it says, then draw them together for yourself, one to another, into one stick, that they may become one in your hand. Now again, however he made it look like they were one, right? He couldn't glue them. He didn't have his drill with him. He didn't have his rubber bands or anything else. So, but he made it look like they were one. And when the sons of your people speak to you, saying, will you not declare to us what you mean by this? How come you got, why do you got that stick? Say to them, well, thus says Adonai Yahweh. Behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I will put them with it, with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they will be one in my hand. Now again, the tribes, the 10 tribes of Israel were also the tribe of Joseph, right? Joseph. And they were also known as the Ephraimites, right? They're Ephraimites, as some people pronounce it. The point is, God says, I'm going to use this as an object lesson. And people are going to ask you, what are you doing with this stick? Verse 20, and the sticks on which you write will be in your hand before their eyes, and speak to them, thus says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will take the sons of Israel from among the nations where they have gone, and I will gather them from every side and bring them into their own land. And I will make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel. And one king will be king for all of them. And they will no longer be two nations and no longer be divided into two kingdoms. They also will no longer defile themselves. Now, let me finish reading this verse and then I want to pause. They also will no longer defile themselves with their idols, or with their detestable things, or with any of their transgressions, but I will save them from all their places of habitation in which they have sinned, and I will cleanse them, and they will be my people, and I will be their God. So, whatever this stick is, some have argued, one commentary I had read was six different types of sticks or pieces of wood that this could be. I don't think we need to go that far. Okay? I don't think it matters if it's rough stick or if it's a finished piece of wood. I don't think we need to worry about what is the species of wood. We don't. That, you're missing the point. Right? Two sticks. Look at that. They look like one. That's the point. Right? So Judah and Ephraim will be brought together. They were divided in 931 BC, so they have been separated by this time approximately 350 years. It seems like they will never be reunited. The northern tribes have been gone for over 150 years in exile. How can you put them together if they're scattered all over, right? So God interprets this and says, here's what I will do. Seven acts of God here. I think you probably already noticed them, but I filled them in there for you. As God fulfills his covenants with Abraham, his covenant with David, as he fulfills the new covenant, there, first of all, it refers to territory. I will take the sons of Israel, I will gather them from every side, and I will bring them into their own land. There is a, that's what God promised to Abraham, wasn't it? This land. But he also says there will be not just be territory, secondly, there will be a political unification. I will make them one nation in the land. And thirdly, he says, I will spiritually purify them. I will save them, and I will cleanse them, and I will be their God. Now, God has said, this is what I will do. Will God keep his word? Okay. That's the fundamental question. Now, again, this is not God speaking to Israel, but all of this being fulfilled with the church. Right? This is not a bait and switch thing, right? God is not promising Israel, I'll gather you, I'll restore you, and I'll do, by the way, that was actually for the Gentiles. No, sorry. God doesn't do that. God is not a slick salesman like that. When God makes a promise to these people, he will fulfill that promise to these people. Okay, that's a fundamental principle of interpretation. And it is this method of interpretation which separates Christian denominations, right? This is a fundamental thing. Will God keep his promises to Israel? Now, if you say no, there's different ways of saying no. You can say no and say, well, God is unable to keep his promise. Or you would say no, because he's actually going to give these things to the church, to Christianity, to the church, because Israel has permanently forfeited their right to claim these promises. That's called covenant theology. Okay, which is the majority of denominations in our day. Or if you say yes, God will keep his word to his people. Okay? It's a fundamental principle, and you have to come to some settlement on this in your own heart and mind. So God says, this is what I will do. And what did he say will be the results for the nation of Israel? They will no longer defile themselves with their idols or with their detestable things or with any of their transgressions. Now they've been doing that, right, for their entire life as a nation, right? Since day one, since Mount Sinai, right? Soon as they said all that God has said we will do, poof, right? Aaron and the whole Oh, look, the gold made itself into a golden calf. It's amazing, right? Threw it into the fire, out it came. Right? Right? It made itself. They have rebelled against God since they became a nation, right? God says, when I do this, when I put those two pieces of wood together, right? Or if when I put all those bones together, same thing. He says, they will no longer defile themselves. They will be so changed that they will always obey. Right? That's that fundamental principle again. God is not simply going to help them be a little more obedient. He will make them obedient. They will no longer defile themselves. And they, secondly, will be my people. And that is what God has promised to them from way back in the book of Leviticus and what we've seen several times in the book of Ezekiel. They will be God's people. At this point in time, the world looks at Israel and says their God has abandoned them. God says, I'm going to restore them. And you will know that I am Yahweh. Well, that leads us. Well, let me pause. Any questions on that before we move on to the covenant of peace? All right, verse 24 through 28, real quickly. This covenant of peace, and my servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd, and they will all walk in my judgments and keep my statutes. And if we have missed the first two aspects of obedience, he says very clearly, and do them. All right? In other words, what? Perfect obedience. They will walk in my statutes, in my judgments, they will keep my statutes, and they will do my statutes. So there will be obedience. And if you've been keeping score, you look at this and say, Israel has never done this throughout their entire history. That's true. But they will. And it is only because God brings salvation to them. So there will be obedience. Secondly, the people will dwell in the land forever. Verse 25. And they will inhabit the land that I gave to Jacob my servant, which your fathers inhabited, and they will inhabit it, they and their sons' sons, forever. So they will permanently inhabit the land. And David, my servant, will be their prince forever. And I will, verse 26, I will cut a covenant of peace with them. And again, that just the Legacy Standard Bible opts to translate it that way because that's a very literal rendering of the Hebrew text. You would cut a covenant, and again, the idea from Genesis 15, isn't it? Where Abraham, where the animals are gathered and they're split in half and Abraham walks between them. And the whole point of that illustration is what? If I don't fulfill this, well, Abraham doesn't walk through, God walks through. But the point is, if I don't keep this covenant, may I be like these slaughtered animals. Now, Abraham doesn't walk through, God does. So God is saying, I will keep this covenant. So you cut a covenant. And God will cut an everlasting covenant of peace with them. It will be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will give them the land. And I will multiply them. And I will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. Reestablishing the temple. And if we would just stop there, in one sense, that would be really good. But there's more to this promise, verse 27. And there's some play on words here. My dwelling place also will be with them. And I will be their God, and they will be my people. The word dwelling place, I typed in the Hebrew transliteration of it, but if you take off the first two letters, the M-I, so instead of Mishkan, you have Shekan or Shekinah glory. Okay, it's related to the concept of the dwelling, the glory cloud that dwelled with them. So God is saying, my dwelling place will be with them, and I will be their God. God's not going to be embarrassed by them. He's not going to avoid them. He's not going to hide from them. And they will be my people. And what? And the nations will know that I am Yahweh. Who does what? Who sanctifies Israel. That's the only way they're going to be pure. That's the only way they can be clean, is if God sets them apart, right? When my sanctuary, my holy place, is in their midst forever. Now, again, I've shown you the words there, Kadash and Mikdash, but the Hebrew word for holiness is Kadosh, and here sanctified, this is related, Kadash and Mikdash, it's all related to that concept of being set apart. Now, I've just started working on Ezekiel chapters 40 through 48. When you grasp how big and how detailed this information is in chapters 40 through 48, and if God were simply, and I read it this afternoon, these people who say, well, this hasn't happened yet, and so therefore it has to be a reference to Christianity and God doing this for Christians, then what is the point of spending chapters 40 through 48? And giving, what does he give to Ezekiel? I got it here, I think. He gives Ezekiel approximately 320 precise measurements in chapters 40 through 48. Now, if you're just simply going to say, well, you know, I know what I revealed there, but that's really talking about the church, then why bother with 320 precise measurements? You just say, well, it was about this big. That's all we'd have to do. It's a really big place, right? In fact, the temple, we'll get to this, but the temple is Moses, the tabernacle, remember the holy place and the holy of holies in the time of Moses was 15 feet wide, 45 feet long. A little smaller than our building lengthwise, right? But to give you an idea, 15 feet. In the time of Solomon, Solomon's temple, he actually doubled that to 30 by 90. Okay. The temple that is revealed through Ezekiel is a square that is approximately 875 feet on each side. Just a little bigger, right? That's not quite three city blocks, right? Put that in perspective. 2.5 city blocks, okay? So for God to give all of that description to Ezekiel, either it's a complete waste of ink, and he just could have said, see Ephesians 2, right? God could have done that. But he gives all of this information and the restoration of all of the sacrifices and the restoration of a priesthood and all of these things. God says, my sanctuary is in their midst forever. You and I, when we get to Israel, in the kingdom, we'll see this massive temple complex. And out of the middle of that temple complex will flow a river, right? And that water will run out the east side of the temple, and it will flow down to the Dead Sea, and it will no longer be the Dead Sea, right? Because you'll be able to fish in the Dead Sea, right? In the kingdom. All these changes will come because God will keep his promise to his people. So this covenant of peace. Now we can say, well, God made a covenant with different, yes, he did. He made numerous covenants, but this covenant is made with Israel. And Israel will be at peace. They will have shalom for 1,000 years, right? Because the God of peace will keep his word. Well, I need to stop there because we then get into what some people say is the really most exciting parts of Ezekiel, and that's the whole issue of Gog and Magog, right? For people who enjoy spiritual conspiracy stories, if you will. Now, Ezekiel does not reveal Gog and Magog as a spiritual conspiracy story, but there are people who get so wrapped up in who is Gog and who is Magog and all this stuff, and they get so wrapped up in all, they miss the whole picture. So we're not going to do that by the grace of God. So we're going to keep our focus where it needs to be. And it's going to be different than what some have taught in years past. I do not think, as some would say, that Gog and Magog is actually Russia. So just wait for Russia to attack Israel, right? Well, if you do that, I think you're going to be looking in the wrong direction. So, and I have that on your notes there. You can look it up. But